Welcome to the For Love and Money podcast, the show where business and social purpose meet to inspire a movement for positive change. Here's your host, Carolyn Butler Madden.
I'm really excited to share this episode featuring Nikki Beaumont, who is founder and CEO of Beaumont People. Beaumont People is a leading recruitment business who are all about placing people first, whether those people are their own people, their own employees, their candidates, or their clients. This people-first philosophy and purpose-driven vision to connect people with organizations that empower them to do meaningful work and to create more opportunities for meaningful work in Australia has seen Nikki provide much more than standard recruitment services to her customers. Key to Nikki's success has been the unfaltering investment she makes in her people. She's crafted a work environment that is conducive to success, where her people are nurtured and motivated to achieve their personal best, not only for the business, but just as importantly, for themselves. Now, in this episode, we talk a little bit about Beaumont People's approach and some of the initiatives it's driven, but we zero in on one key initiative that they implemented 3 years ago, the four-day work week. As one of the first Australian businesses to do this, Nikki has some valuable insights to share, and I know there are going to be some amazing aha moments as you listen to this episode. I hope you can take these insights and use them to think not just about the four-day work week, but also to question some of the other rules of business that we rarely examine. How can we do things better? What can we change? How can we create value for people? These are some of the questions I hope you will think about as you listen to Nikki and me chat in the next hour. I hope you enjoyed the gems that Nikki shares. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us on the For Love and Money podcast.
You're welcome. I'm very excited to be here, Carolyn. Thank you.
It's been a long time coming, this conversation, and I'm really excited to get into the subject, which is the four-day work week, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I want to kick off, the first question I always ask everyone is there a role for love in business?
For me, that's an absolutely yes. And I actually do have your wonderful book right in front of me, actually, as I was chatting to you earlier just now. I flicked my eyes up and I could see your wonderful book, For Love and Money. And, you know, we've had this conversation before. And to be honest, it's not something that until we started having these conversations, I never really thought about. But, you know, since you raised it and we've chatted about it a number of times, you know, over the last few years, absolutely think there's a place for love in business. I absolutely do. And I think from my own experience, if I think about that and look at the love in our business, in my business and in other businesses, you know, I think that makes an absolutely huge difference. Having and being open to love in business, yeah, definitely.
And I'm going to ask you to share your story and how you came to start Beaumont People. But I just want to pick up on that, because when you say, you know, you hadn't really thought about it much before, I find not so many, but I look at you and your path and what I've learned about you over the years, Nikki, and it seems to me that you were intuitively driven by love of people. Okay. But it's just that this word love in business is so, you know, we just don't use it because business isn't meant to be like this, is it? So, you know, I feel like that's been intuitive for you, but you probably haven't labeled it in that way. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes through. So tell us, tell us your story. How did you come to start Beaumont People? And actually, for our listeners, can you first share, what is Beaumont People?
Okay, thank you. Well, we're a recruitment business in Australia. We're based in the eastern seaboard of Australia, Sydney, Gold Coast, Byron. I'm based up in the Byron area and now in Melbourne. So we're a recruitment business. We specialise in a number of areas such as, we're well known for charity, education, health and social care, pretty much all of your corporate head office white collar types of roles is what we're known for. Yeah, how did I come to start Beaumont People? I've been in recruitment for many, many years. I fell into recruitment by accident, not long after leaving university, as many people do. I was a temp, and clearly a good temp, otherwise they wouldn't have approached me for a job. And, you know, I was pretty much approached for a job. Would you consider a job in recruitment? And I did, and here I am now. So I started in recruitment in the UK, some wonderful years, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's interesting, you know, we talk a lot about meaningful work now, and go into working in the recruitment world in a meaningful way at the time. It wasn't intentional, but what I do know now is that this is actually meaningful work for me personally. And as you said earlier, it is my love of people. The recruitment world and all that goes with it, you know, the fun of it, the great wins that you get when you place candidates in roles which mean something to them, or, you know, fulfill their career obligations, or working with clients and solving their problems, just the interest, it's clearly right for me. So, you know, how lucky am I that I fell into it by accident? But here I am, it's, you know, embarrassing to say, but I think it's about 35 years later. still loving it. And, you know, people say, when are you going to retire? Yes, well, probably in a few years, but I'm just not ready yet because there's still so many great things that I want to do. So I have been in recruitment for a long time, and I came out to Australia in 2000 to work on the Olympic Games project, which was very exciting. The recruitment side of the Olympic Games, I was general manager of Olympic recruitment. So here I am in Australia now, absolutely loved Australia. And I feel as Australian as I do English now. And I knew that this was where I wanted to be. So after the Olympic Games, I set up my business, Beaumont People. We were Beaumont Consulting then, but Beaumont People. I always knew I was going to set up my own business. It was always something that I knew was right for me. I'm a bit of an entrepreneur. My parents both had their own businesses back in the day. So it was always there. And I think, you know, some of the main reasons that I wanted to set up my own business was also because the companies that I've worked for, great as they were, with so many things and taught me a lot and helped me get to where I am now. The reality is that I was often very frustrated with the people decisions that they made at the time. You know, I've always been very much somebody who wants to look after the people that you work with, the team that you work with, the people who report into you and your colleagues at all levels. And I used to get frustrated and angry and annoyed and upset at times when sometimes, particularly in the bigger corporates that I work for, that decisions were made at a corporate level that were not people focused. And I don't think they're really related to the work and what was happening or was motivating for the people on the ground. So I always vowed that I would set up my own and I would place people first. Although I didn't actually have the words to articulate that well, but I do now, and I understand, you know, that those words are actually quite perfect for us. They work for us, they're right. And that's something that I think we do very well. And it's one of the things that makes me happy. That's one of the things I love about being founder and a business owner and being in a leadership position, that, you know, how good it is to be able to run a business and actually really truthfully and authentically place people.
And you can really feel it. I mean, from the first time I met you and I came into the Sydney office, you just feel this energy. People, you can feel it from the people. There just seems to be happiness, positive energy, you know, chatter, banter. And now I've been, you know, doing some more work with you and coming in and spending time in the office and sitting there. It's a lovely environment. The banter that goes on and just the supportiveness is so apparent and just so natural. So congratulations on what you've created in Beaumont People. For our listeners, so we interviewed Nina Maps and Bone quite a few episodes ago, actually, on the podcast, and we talked about Beaumont's purpose. But for those who haven't heard that episode, can you share what your purpose is and perhaps share some of the ways it's inspired you to show up as a business so far?
Yeah, thank you, Carolyn. Look, our purpose is to create more opportunities for meaningful work and to connect people with opportunities for meaningful work. So, and, you know, that's something that you helped us articulate because, you know, for many years, you know, I'm a numbers person, so forgive me for not always having the words to describe things. I haven't, you know, they've not necessarily been that important to me to describe things, but I've been really good with, I can describe things through numbers, interestingly. So, you know, I think that's something that we've always done, but we weren't able to articulate it until more recently. And thank you, you know, for all of your help some years ago now. But I think the thing is that as a recruitment business, you know, we've got a huge responsibility in finding great roles for the people that we connect with and obviously finding great candidates for companies. And it, you know, many years ago, I've been in recruitment, you know, for a long time, it could often be a little bit transactional. And I think the reality is, and because of the way I feel about placing people first and creating a great environment and people being truly happy and satisfied in their roles, you know, what does that mean? You know, that's the responsibility for us. The responsibility for us as a recruitment business is not purely transactional, even though, you know, for some that may be how it is or how it feels, but for us it's not. You know, this is people's lives, you know, this is really important stuff. And we know ourselves as an organization what a difference it makes when you've got a great environment, when you've got people who, you know, show up to work every day with a big smile on their face going, you know, can't wait to get on with my day. So, you know, so that's what it means is helping other people in other roles with organizations to have that same experience that we experience, that we love, and that we enjoy. You know, it's, you know, it affects so many things. You know, it's great to work in, you know, isn't it wonderful, like you say, to walk into the office and have a team of smiling people who have got great energy and are proud of what they do. You know, so, and to be able to replicate that and inspire other organizations to do that and to inspire people looking for work in their careers to go, well, you know what, you know, there is potential for you to work somewhere that you're really truly happy doing something that you really truly love. And it, you know, I see that's our job, is not just to be transactional. This is really important stuff.
And there's a ripple effect, isn't there? Because it's not just the individual. Like if you can help connect someone to meaningful work, whether it's your own people or whether it is, you know, your clients, candidates who come to you, it's not just them. It's when people feel fulfilled, you know, when they're happy in their work, because God, we spend so much time working. Then there's a ripple effect, and it affects their families. You know, they go home instead of feeling frustrated and negative, feeling like they've, you know, a good day's work has been done, right? And they bring that home, that energy home, and, you know, that impacts their family, that impacts their friends, the communities they show up in. So there's a massive, massive ripple effect. I think the impact is huge.
Yeah, it is. And I hear that, you know, regularly from, you know, some of the team here will share that with me, or and some of their partners, because I often get to meet, you know, people's various partners, and they will say, you've really made a difference to our lives, to, you know, to how we are together, what, you know, how we live, how much fun we have, what we get to do, you know. So, and that's, you know, how wonderful is that to be able to do that?
Oh,
you know?
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I think a lot of people think meaningful work, they can only get meaningful work by working for a charity, for example. And I just think, you know, it's because of the way we've looked at work, and meaningful work has been limited to those working in the charity sector or those who show up in high places or whatever. But, you know, imagine a world where more and more people are connected to meaning in their work, whatever they do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whatever they do. Yeah. And that's a huge opportunity. Now, before we get on to the 4-day work week, just can you share, because you guys at Beaumont People have invested. So this is not just words on a piece of paper. You know, once you really uncovered, and I say uncovered intentionally because it was there, that whole thing about meaningful work, it was there. It was just a case of peeling away the layers. And I remember when we finally got there, you were like, oh my God, yes, this is us. This is us. We've just never articulated it that way. And that was just the beginning. Like, you have done so many things to actually live that purpose, and you've invested quite heavily in it, in innovation. Is there, 4-day work week aside, actually, no, I won't put it aside because this is about the 4-day work week, but what are you most proud of so far on your journey?
Oh gosh, that's a big, there's an awful lot I'm proud of. I don't actually often stop to think about that too much because you just keep chugging along, don't you, really, with, you know, the long list of things that you still have to do and want to achieve. I'm proud of the team and the business that we've created, you know, number one, really. When I think, what am I proud of? I go to the individuals and the team, you know, like I go to the individuals in the marketing team. I go to the individuals in the health and social care team or whatever. So I go straight to the people and start thinking about people. The executive team, you know, we were very lucky to have a two-day offsite a couple of weeks ago. And I'm just so proud of the people in the team and who they are and how they show up and how inspiring they are, not just to me, but to their colleagues and to our customers, our clients and our candidates. So I'm proud of that. But I'm also proud of things, for example, the 4-day work week. You know, when we launched that 3 years ago, we really hoped it would go well, as you do when you launch something new. But gosh, that was very much an unknown, and that was pushing us out of our comfort zone. But, and we'll talk about it more in a while, but, you know, hey, how wonderful is it to be able to still do the great work that we do, achieve as much as we were achieving, and, you know, we are a high-performing organisation. And to be able to do it, for the most part, working 4 days and getting paid 5, you know. So I'm really proud of that. I'm proud of, finally, and, you know, I still kick myself and go, why didn't I do it earlier? I didn't do it earlier because I didn't have the answers. But of launching our gender-neutral parental leave scheme, you know, that was a big one for me. I always knew I had to do it. I just didn't know how. It took me a while to get there and find a way that it would work. We were only a relatively small organization, you know. It was like, how? I know we have to do this, but I just don't know how to make it work. And anyway, eventually I did. And then the other main thing I think for me is the work that we've done with the charity sector over the last, gosh, I think it must be 15 years now, of working with them on a essentially a not-for-profit basis, which is charging them much lower recruitment fees. So that we can provide them with the best people that they need to do the work that they need to do, but at the lowest cost, so that they can keep their wonderful charity hard-earned funds often doing the good work that they do. And so we calculate what we've saved charities, which is the difference between the, you know, normal commercial recruitment fees that we would charge, but compared to the lower fees that we do charge them. And I think we're not far off $35 million we'd have saved charities.
Oh, my God, that's amazing. That's amazing. There's a story there, I know, around the GFC. So can you just quickly share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, look, when the GFC hit us, as it hit many organisations at that time, it was a big slap in the face, i.e. that companies just stopped hiring. And they really, you know, our income, the jobs to be filled, which is where our revenue comes in, you know, the temps to be placed, was literally swiped away from under our feet overnight. And been very much a people-led organization. I decided at the time, and with my executive team at the time, that, you know what, we had such a great team, we didn't want to let them go, even though our income had dropped. We were just like, if we could just break even, that's okay. You know, let's just see how long we can just hang on and break even. We don't need to make big profits. What we need to do is retain the fantastic people in the business on the salaries that they're on, so that they can pay the bills that they've got, and we'll hold hands pretty much, and we'll work through this together. So that's kind of what we were trying to do with the GSE. It didn't quite always work out like that, but that was the intention. That's actually what we did do. But I've had this dream for many years that one day, when the company was successful enough, that I would have one person who looked after charities on a pro bono basis. But and then the GFC hit, and it was like, well, when am I, you know, we've got no income, you know, not the income coming in now to sustain us, you know, that's not going to happen. And it was through that process, and actually through talking to some other people at the time, and some other things came together. For example, you know, some of the contracts that we were tied into, advertising contracts at the time, spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars we couldn't get out of. What are we going to do with all these adverts? Could we give them to the charity state for money? All of this kind of came together. And the realization hit me that I didn't need to do it pro bono. And actually, the reality was, talking to some charity CEOs at the time, was it's not sustainable if you do it pro bono anyway. Why do you not do this at cost, pretty much like what you're trying to do with the business? Because if you do that for charities, if you can pare it down to cost, it would save the charities money, it would give them a service they're having to pay somewhere anyway. You know, the odd recruitment business will give the odd charity a pro bono, but it's not something that you can do a lot of. And actually, I was very naive at the time. I didn't actually realize how big the charity sector was. I know now.
You know.
Is, you know, we've got a team of, I don't know, what are we up to now? Probably 18 people working in the charity. Yeah, wow. Hence how we've got to the $35 million savings, you know. So that's kind of how it came about. And you know, it gave me something to move people who were, you know, didn't have the opportunity to, you know, the clients that they were working on weren't working. They started to look after the charity sector on significantly lower recruitment fees, which meant it was affordable. And soon the charity sector side of our business took off, and it sustained a lot of people, and it sustained them in their roles, and it helped the charity sector out at the same time, and, you know, saved a lot of money that has been put to good use in many charities. So it's been a huge success story. And something,
I absolutely love that story. And one of the things I love about it is, you know, faced with that challenge, the traditional response would be cut and, you know, and just cut wherever we can. And I love that you looked for alternatives and found an alternative. And in finding that alternative, you actually created a win-win situation, a win-win-win situation, and $35 million in savings for a business of your size. I mean, for any size business, but it's massive, massive. Congratulations, that is huge. And going, still going.
And still going, yeah, no, absolutely. So we've still got so much to do, you know, that's what I mean. You know, I'm 35 years in recruitment and 22 years in Beaumont, and there's so much to do, still so much more that we can do.
And that comes back to love, doesn't it? Like that, like what you want to achieve, and loving what you do and doing what you love.
Enjoying the podcast? If you're looking for more inspiration, head to our website, thecauseeffect.com.au, for more resources on how you can start using your business as a force for good. Or buy the For Love and Money book. Every copy sold allows us to protect 1 square meter of rainforest. Help us save 10,000 square meters by 2025.
So let's talk about the 4-day work week, because you introduced this 3 years ago. You were one of the earliest movers in Australia on the 4-day work week. What was the catalyst? How did it come about?
I saw Andrew Barnes, the New Zealand Perpetual Guardian founder, talk about it at a conference. So I'd read a little bit about it, and then he spoke at a conference. There's a wonderful conference called Thriving Workplace. I heard him speak at that. So he just launched it in his organization, and he was actually still in the trial time himself when he spoke. So it was still early on for him. And I heard him talk about it and, you know, how it was working for him. And I had been working part-time myself. So I'd been generally working, to be fair, 3 or 4 days myself at the time. And I'd been able to do that and choose to do that because I'm the CEO and founder of my own organization. So, you know, but I was totally inspired by listening to him. And I was like, wow, what a difference this could make to the people in my organization, to be able to give them the opportunity to still get paid 5 days, yet work for and have that day that, look, I know I take it and I enjoy it. You know, I take my day when I'm not working and go and, you know, run the lighthouse or go and cycle the new Northern Rivers Rail Trail here or whatever it is that I want to do, or, you know, go shopping with my mom. You know, it's I know how much I enjoy the opportunity and the flexibility to still earn the same as I do and work 4 days. And so, you know, I think I've learned a lot of things in business from putting my own spin on it. Well, if I really value that, then, and it makes a difference to me and it makes a difference to my mental health, if I do spend a day outdoors in nature on a Wednesday or a Thursday or whatever day I choose, then why would everybody else in my organization not want to take the same benefits that I'm lucky enough to get in my position and my role, you know? So why not share the love?
Do you know, that is a perspective that I wish we saw a lot more of, this idea that, you know, you're at a stage in your career, your life, where you have access to things that others don't have access to. I think there are many who would go, I've earned that. Whereas your perspective is, I value that. And if I value that, and, you know, I care about people as I do, I want others to have access to it. And that is such a refreshing attitude. And I just feel that there's so much to learn from that attitude, because if more of us took that approach rather than the exclusive club, it's for me and me alone because I've earned it and I've had to fight my way here. No, make it easier for others. Let's open up opportunities so more people can enjoy benefits, because when more people enjoy benefits, everything gets better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, so it's absolutely for me. I love the idea from the very beginning. Did I quite know how it would work? No, not at all.
So how did you go about implementing it? How did you approach it?
It took a little while for the executive team to just talk to them about it and make sure they were comfortable before we announced it, that we were going to do this. So I thought it was a great idea, but as is the way, it's not, this is Nikki's idea and we just get on and do it. It's this is a collective. And so, you know, we worked together. And so I talked to the executive team about it and gave them the opportunity to think about it, because it's a scary thing. You know, any organization that thinks this through is great when you think about all the benefits, but there's an awful lot of concerns and challenges that go with it too. So we spoke about it as an executive team and agreed, yes, it was something that we wanted to do. It took us a while to get to that because, you know, of all the concerns that go along with how on earth do you make this work. But once we did decide, we literally announced it to our team at our annual conference. Through sharing, all we did was say, we've got something exciting to tell you. We literally shared Andrew Barnes's TED Talk. And people sat there going, oh, what's this? You know, why are we watching a TED Talk? Who's Andrew Barnes? And there was a few people who went, oh my God, I know who Andrew Barnes is. And they clicked immediately, Andrew Barnes, 4-day week. And then it became apparent, like there was tears, there was shock. People were like, you know, There's a whole team of people looking at me, Nina, my managing director, and, you know, the executive team going, what? I'm going to give this a go. So that's how we announced it. And then literally from once we sort of said, okay, you know, the TED Talk finished, yes, this is something that we want to do. The first thing we then did was go, let's break out into some groups while we're here at our company conference, and let's think about the pros and the cons and the challenges, and let's get it all out there on the table. Because, of course, the immediate thing it brings up is excitement, i.e., and wow, can I work 4 days and have five off? What am I going to do with my fifth day? To absolute terror from many people. How's this going to work? This is never going to work. I can't make this work. And everything in between you can imagine. So that was the beginnings of it. And we, you know, once we'd got a lot of that out, it was, you just have to get it all out on the table. And some of the best advice that Andrew ever gave me at the time was, you know, and I had so many questions about, well, how does this work and how does that work? He said, you know what? Just get your team to work it out. Don't come in with your big executive boots, as many people do, and yes, I can probably be guilty of that myself sometimes, but don't come in with big executive boots and tell the team how it's going to work. This is a, everybody needs to work together to make this successful. Go to them and get them to workshop it, get them to think about how they can make it work. Because essentially, you know, if it's going to be, if it's going to work, it's up to them to make it work. You know, they're the ones who are going to need to find ways to be more productive in their day. So we did that. So we then had a team of people that put their hands up that said, yeah, we'd like to workshop it. So we workshopped it for months until the team came up with some ways that they thought it would work, run it by the management. And we, it was interesting. We, as a management team, I think we were wanted to be very considerate to if this is how the team thinks it will work. There'll be things there that we go, yeah, we can agree to that, but maybe not that, etc. But let's not try and change some of the things that they think will work, but we think maybe it won't. So there were quite a few things at the time that I remember going, but you know what? It could. It's how they think it will work best. Let's give it a go. You know, let's give it a go. And
wow. And
the best way for us to go with how they think it will work, and then we can adjust it from then. If it works, great, and if it doesn't, then, you know, we did a trial for 6 months, we can adjust it along the way. So that was a great learning for us as a business, you know. I think for all those that were involved in it, for the people trying to make it work, for the executive team, that, you know, sometimes, you know, they were absolutely our best consulting team. They, you know, we didn't really need to go outside. We could work it out within ourselves. And we still do. There's still tweaks and changes, you know, that go along. But I loved that it was their job and their responsibility.
That's amazing. I didn't know that you'd done it that way. And I love that. And even that you implemented some ideas that you didn't believe would work, but, you know, it's about empowering them and also, yeah, putting some trust into a process and being prepared to, you know, work through the problems as you implemented it. That's amazing. I'm curious, was there anything that you did that you didn't think would work that did work?
Not really. I mean, I think, you know, the whole thing, there are so many questions that go around it. And I'm constantly being asked by people, you know, people who know me in the industry will connect to me, or clients of ours will connect and say, we're thinking about the 4-day week and we've got some questions. Because, I mean, the reality is there are so many questions.
Mm.
I mean, the great thing is that now there's lots of resources online, and there is actually a wonderful organisation called the 4-Day Week run by the original founders in New Zealand, Charlotte and Andrew. So they're actually taking the movement globally. So, you know, there's so many resources and so much support there now that wasn't there when I started this, because we were one of the early adopters. So, you know, I'm speaking to Andrew direct and messaging him on LinkedIn. What about this? What about that? Etc. In the early days, because trying to get my head around it, because, you know, I did launch this myself going, I believe it can work, but I don't actually have all of the answers to how it can work.
Mm.
And there were some things that, there were quite a few things that really needed workshopping to get this to work. So yeah, it is really quite the process to be comfortable with it.
And so it's all about productivity, isn't it? And efficiencies. So how did you approach that side of it? How did you manage the productivity side?
Well, the productivity cycle varies from job title to job title, person to person, team to team. So we really had to sort of put it back on them to go, okay, you know, where can you be more productive? You know, where are things that you can change in your working week? What are things that you can do differently? Because it's not about working more hours. This isn't about a compressed hours. It's about trying to achieve the same productivity in less hours. So one of the first things was to agree on what productivity looks like in everybody's roles. And actually, that's one of the harder things because we don't always talk in terms of what your actual productivity is on a day-to-day, week-to-week, or month-to-month basis in detail. We agreed that what we would do would be we would measure productivity, and you know, people actually only get to do the four-day week if they're meeting their productivity measures. So getting those productivity measures right was important to us. What you do need to avoid if you're going to do the four-day week, or we have, was not to have people doing the four-day week and we're actually not productive in the role and not, you know, not performing at the required level. The people who do get to do the four-day work week are the ones who are performing and are still productive even when they're working 4 days. So there's an element of everybody looking individually into their own role and the way that they work and looking for ways. And it may well be reduce some of the meetings that were not essential, or looking at some of the tasks that they were doing or spending time on that was non-essential, you know, whether it was the amount of hours that they might spend researching something on social media, or you know, the travel time to work, of course, because we launched the 4 day week just as COVID happened, and so that a lot of things did change at that time anyway. But we have had to look at things and continue to look at things more closely as a business too, which has been a good thing, you know. So it's actually brought up a lot of really good things for us to go, okay, why do we do it like that? Is there a better way? Is there a more efficient way to do things that saves time? So we actually have put a considerable investment into the organization of various tools and tech stack add-ons and things like that to improve efficiencies, and we'll continue to do so. So, and it's naturally what you do anyway as an organization, but I think the 4 day week was something that for us just put more focus on that. We needed to put more focus and time and attention on that. I think the other main thing that we did was, you know, we've got a lot of recruitment consultants within our business that were working probably very much too long hours, too hard, overworked, overstretched, with just the volume of workload that was coming in from, you know, some of the clients that we're working with. So we actually put some different support measures in place to allow them to reduce their workload by having other support, administrative support within the organization, etc. So we were very mindful of things like that we could do as an organization. And even though, yes, there are some extra costs associated with that, if we kept productivity at a certain level, then that would offset some of the costs. But one of the ways that we looked at it was we were at that time very concerned about burnout for some of our high performers. We're concerned about retention. And, you know, for us, some of our high performers, we don't want to get to a stage where they're burnt out and wanting to leave or change roles just because of volume of work.
Mm.
And so the 4 day week for us was a great solution to that. But it needed some other support underneath it. So we, you know, when you actually look at this from a bigger picture perspective, the cost of the support that we've put in place over the last 3 years has been outweighed by the retention, the people that have stayed within the business, and their continued productivity, but their better well-being. you know, their ability to continue to do what they do in their best environment and circumstances because of the support. So it was difficult to work it out and think about it at the time. And a lot of people would go, well, that's just going to put more cost in. Well, yes, but that's only a short-term view. You know, we're looking at the long-term here. We're actually looking at what a wonderful opportunity for people, what a wonderful opportunity to give people a better experience who are, you know, who are stretched and overworked and at potential burnout. What a great opportunity to do this and actually retain people in the business longer, because that there is value there. It was tough, but I really feel that that's one of the things that we've done really well.
I love it. You're a rule breaker, Nikki Beaumont.
Yeah, if I'm actually probably spot on, I do like to break a little rule here.
I love rule breakers. Not all rule breakers, but people who, you know, question things that should be questioned and start exploring and curiosity. And I think the value of that is showing up in your business in droves. One thing as you were talking that was really standing out to me was this idea of productivity measures and time management. And I'm curious to know, did you have a grasp before implementing the 4-day work week? Did you have a grasp on a way to measure productivity and time management, or was it more sort of intuitive and up to the relevant managers to manage that?
I think we were good at it with some roles, but not all roles. So we were good at the roles that it was easy to measure, you know, particularly our recruitment consultant jobs, because you could measure that on how many people they put in jobs, etc. But actually, when we introduced the 4-day week, it actually made us stop, think, what does it mean, reevaluate all of that and all that goes along with it. Because some of our biggest concerns and people's biggest concerns with introducing the 4-day week is, well, how is this going to affect our customers? How is this going to affect our clients and candidates? Because if we're only available to talk to them 4 days out of 5, you know, what we don't want to do is devaluate the quality of the service by introducing the 4-day week. You know, we want to make sure that our clients are equally as happy, if not continue to strive for more satisfaction from clients and candidates, if that's possible. So, you know, that was something we were really very concerned about. And of course, that was one of our initial measures was, okay, you know, we measure our clients and candidate satisfaction. Well, that's what, you know, what's a deal breaker for us in terms of our client and candidate satisfaction needs to be at this level and more. And it actually helped us bring some of these things more into the day-to-day conversation. They were always there. But what was great about introducing the 4-day week, I think, was that it's really made some of these things, like continually as an organization, sharing what the satisfaction is of clients and candidates, celebrating what it is, looking at it, measuring it, to make sure that still remains at the levels that we attain, you know, that we want to be at. So, you know, I love that the 4-day week has shown us that path to go, okay, you kind of measured it anyway, but you didn't bring it necessarily as much into everyday conversation as you have since.
And that's where I was coming from, because it seems that when you break rules, when you change the way you've always done things, and you pull it apart with a view of putting it together in a whole different way, you have to start understanding it more, don't you? Instead of operating on autopilot because this is the way we've always done things, you actually have to examine and understand and think about, you know, how you're going to evaluate success. So it's a really interesting exercise, I imagine, in really getting insight on your business, deeper insight than you would have had before.
Yeah, absolutely is. Yeah, it is. And look, you know, here we are 3 years in. Do we measure it as closely as we did in the very beginning? No, we don't need to necessarily on a month-to-month basis. We do our customer satisfaction, because that's one of the key indicators for us as an organization anyway. But you know, it certainly took us on a wonderful journey, and it certainly helped us reevaluate a lot of things. And And it was a good thing. I think that was a really good thing to do. I'm grateful of that opportunity and the continued opportunity. But the day-to-day productivity of every single individual, do we measure as closely as we did back then? No. Or a monthly, more a quarterly. And I think now we've got it, okay, we've got a feeling about some roles as to whether they're productive or not. And there are certain measures that are just easier to measure for roles. They're quite transparent measures.
Because it becomes the norm. I mean, you're measuring it to make sure that the business doesn't break as a result of doing something new. So you have to earn it. You have to prove your productivity in order to get that benefit of a four-day work week. What percentage of your people have access to it? Like, or not have access, everyone does, but have the four-day work week?
I think I would say of those who are eligible, the four-day week for us doesn't kick in until 6 months service with us. So you need to have worked in the role for 6 months to get up to productivity measures generally, and also, you know, to really have had the time to really understand the full values of the organization and way of working. So we have it, after 6 months ruling anyway. But then after that, I don't know exactly because it's not something that I measure, but I would say 90% of people would be on 4-day work week who are eligible for it. I'll be honest, there are lots of people who are eligible for the 4-day work week. Do they take it every week? No, some don't. Do some take it every week? Absolutely. Yes, they do. You know, so, and some people take it differently these days, you know, so it doesn't necessarily have to be a full day. You know, I've got some people who go, well, I actually don't really want a full day. What I really like to do is have the opportunity to go pick my kids up from school at 3 o'clock and have an hour or two with them. And I might log on later just to check emails and stuff. But I'd actually rather have an hour or two towards the end of the day with my kids, you know, get them home, take them to swimming or whatever. So it takes different forms. And some people will go, I'll actually have this week, I'd like a couple of morning. You know, it doesn't need to be a whole day. And some people go, you know, I've actually got a lot of work on this week. And I'm actually only able to take half day, or even I'm not going to take anything at all this week because I'm on holiday next week for a whole week. So I really just want to be able to leave my week. So, you know, there's lots of different versions of it now within our organisations and a lot more flexibility as to how people take it. And you know, the pandemic taught us an awful lot about flexibility, as we all know, and hybrid working and working from home. So, you know, it really has, for us, that the four-day week has evolved and will continue to evolve, no doubt, into, you know, lots of different things.
And that flexibility shows trust and mutual respect, I think.
Yeah, and actually that's a word that you used earlier, and I meant to sort of pick up on that because, you know, I absolutely, with the four-day week, you know, you do need to have that trust in your organisation with your people. They need to have that trust in you, I think, that you will provide the right environment to support them through this. But I think the pandemic has taught us that in spades, you know, that, you know, when we, was it March 2020, when off we all went home with our laptops? I remember it clearly, having the conversation with Nina going, oh my God, this is scary stuff. I think we need to say to our people, they need to go home because I'm worried about people coming in on public transport or being in the office together. And I don't want, you know, feel responsible. Let's send everybody home with a laptop. Everybody didn't even have a laptop then. And of course, then we worked from home for a couple of years, quite honestly, and you know, very rarely coming into the office. It was wonderful. It taught us a lot about trust. You know, it was very challenging at times. Of course it was, and we all had to work through that. But, you know, when you don't see your people day to day, we were all a trusting organisation, or so we thought we were. But, I think it's taught us even more, you know, that there is no 8:30 to 5:30 start and finish times like there once were. There's flexibility around that suits individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. Biggest learning from doing this initiative, from implementing it?
The biggest learning for me would be to allow the team to come to you with solutions and and not forever feel the responsibility of always giving them the solutions. And not, you know, we've replicated that many times with other things that we've introduced as an organization. You know, we talk about the theory and the idea of what we'd like to achieve, and we might know how we think it could work as an executive team when we launch something, but allowing the team to come through with their ideas and what they can do to support something has been really good. So that's one. The other thing would be just how wonderful it is for people to be able to work 4 days and have that day off for whatever they choose to do. You know, I talk about that. What I love about my business is my people, and how proud I am of my people and them all as individuals. And we don't share it as much as we did in the early days when it was all very exciting. But I know, you know, when people take that day off to study or spend a day in nature or whatever, they have a day with their children or go into school and whatever they do, spend time with their families. I just love giving people that opportunity to do that. I think that's incredible to have that flexibility to do that and for it to work. I think it's amazing for people to work 4 days and have a long weekend or have a day off and do those things. I love that as much as anything. And I love the smiles that I see from that. You know, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's a good thing.
That is so beautiful. And those 2 points that you've just shared, your learnings, allowing the team to come through with their ideas, that to me speaks of leadership as opposed to management. It's instead of this is what we're going to do, this is how we're going to do it, and implementing by empowering them to help contribute to the solution, that's leadership. The other way is actually management, isn't it? And there's a big difference.
Well, I always say, I don't have all the answers. Don't expect me to hold the answers for everything. Come on, you guys, we've got to do this together. You know, I think that there's a responsibility that comes with having all the answers all the time.
Too much.
It's actually lovely to share. And the other thing to think about is if you can create an environment where people can share their fears about things that might, you know, changes that might be made in an organization, for people to be openly talk about it and share their fears and openly talk about what's working or what's not working for them in a role, all that, you know, if you can create that environment, that's wonderful for people to be able to say and feel those things. And you go, okay, I hear what you're saying. I can help you with that. I can do something with that for you. I can make this a better environment for you. I can help you workshop some solutions or whatever it might be. And I think we're very conscious of having that open environment for people to be their authentic selves. And you know, I had somebody say the other day, actually somebody who left our organization recently, he said, this was one of the first companies I've ever worked for where I could really bring my true authentic self to work.
Ooh.
And I love that. I was like, yes, okay, isn't that a wonderful thing to be able to create? Because a lot of people don't always feel that.
And, 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And it goes to your Meaningful Work Insights report that was launched last month or the month before, the 2023 report. One of the outtakes from that was the number one contributor to meaningful work for Australians, from memory, is safety, physical, mental, and emotional safety at work. And you're just talking about if you can create an environment where people can share their fears, creating that environment is contributing to helping people feel safe and, you know, bring their true authentic selves to work and feel safe to do that is absolutely massive. And it goes back to that second point, that second learning that you shared of the joy you're bringing to people as an organization, the joy you're bringing to people by doing this and helping them have a better quality of life is, it goes to the heart of who you are. And I'm talking about who you are, Nikki Beaumont, but also who you are, Beaumont People. Because it's about that. It's people first. It is all about people, and helping them connect to work that they believe is meaningful. And I just think that is amazing. And I love the work you're doing in this place. And we're going to have to wind this up. So I'd like to ask you to share your advice. So anyone listening to this who may be a leader of an organization or an influencer, someone who'd like to speak to their leadership about it and about the four-day work week, what would your advice to them be on first steps?
Okay, probably do some research first. Have a good, there's so much information, connect to 4 day week Australia, there is one now, 4 day week global, and there is so much great information out there. So, and if you know somebody who's done the 4 day week, have a good chat with them. So, if you're going to go to your organization and with this as a proposal or a thought, at least have done some research first. And think about it from all perspectives. You can't come to it going, this would be great for me because then I can. How could it be great for the organization? How could it be great for the team? How could it be great for that person as an individual? So, I think do some research and gather some information first so you know what you're actually proposing. And start a conversation knowing that you may well get pushback from the very beginning, because that's generally the way that most people go. In fact, a lot of the conversations when people come to me say, can I just have a bit of a chat to you about this because I've approached my work and I've got pushback. or I want the best approach. So I think, just open up the conversation, really, in terms of how could this be possible. And you don't need to rush it. We didn't rush it. It took some time.
Everything good does.
Yeah, but approach it in a professional way, like you would do anything. I don't think it's necessarily easy to implement across all types of roles. There are some roles that it's more challenging. That has to be worked through. There are some customer-facing roles or, let's think roles in health, etc., then it is, some roles are more challenging than others in terms of how you can be more productive. But so have a think about that, and if you expect that, you're going to get pushback, what's the pushback going to be, why, and what solutions have you got for that? Have you thought that through? So put yourself in somebody else's shoes is always a good way to start.
Thank you. Last words, any other thoughts that you'd like to share?
I think business can just be an absolutely wonderful place to be. I would love it to be a world where people really do love what they do and love going to work and find it meaningful for them. Working towards a world like that. And, I think we've all got an individual responsibility on that. So if you're a leader, you've got a huge responsibility for the people that are working with you. As an individual, you've got a huge responsibility to go, well, what am I doing? Question yourself. What am I doing? Where am I going? What do I love? What could I change? What can't I change? Why can't I change? There's so many questions that you can ask, and we've all got individual responsibilities there. But I would love to see a world where there's a lot more people that are in meaningful roles that they love and they're happy with. Whether they've got the 4 day week or not, there's still a long journey. And, we're playing our small part in that, hopefully inspiring people, inspiring leaders towards that. But the opportunities are out there, and hey, we're in the lucky country, so let's Australia get really good at this first.
Wonderful. Nikki, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. Thanks very much, Carolyn.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the For Love and Money podcast. If you'd like to take a deeper dive into the purpose movement, visit us at thecauseeffect.com.au. And remember, doing good is good for business. So if you're not doing good, then what are you doing?